Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hooked on Score. I'm your host, Rick Urban, and with me today, we have special guest composer, Amelia Warner. Hello, Amelia. How are you?
Hi, I'm really good. Thank you.
Amelia is joining us from England, by the way. She said she's about 2 hours outside of London in a very picturesque countryside landscape.
Yes, very spooky. Lots of, you know, church spires and mist, and it's really magical.
Amelia is best known for her soundtrack for the 2018 film Mary Shelley, for which she won Breakthrough Composer of the Year at the International Film Music Critics Association Awards, and it also earned her a nomination in the Discovery of the Year category at the World Soundtrack Awards. But today, she is here to talk about her recent score for Wild Mountain Thyme. Wild Mountain Thyme is a film that stars Emily Blunt and Jamie Dornan and Christopher Walken and John Hamm. So we have a pretty amazing cast in this. And Amelia's score for it is, it's a little bit epic. It's a little bit heartwarming. How would you describe your score for this?
Well, I love those words. I'll definitely take epic, and I'll take heartwarming. Romantic. Hopefully there's a bit of character in there and a bit of fun. But the main feel of it was just of a very classic romantic score.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are elements of the Irish kind of setting of the film in there that come through with the score pretty brilliantly. And there are also elements of the, I guess, intimate nature of the actual sort of life in Ireland that come through in the score as well. There's kind of chamber aspects to this in certain spots as well.
Yeah, totally. That's really true. We had a section that was just clarinets, an accordion, and two violins, and a bass. And I guess that was the kind of smaller section that was a bit more indicative of Ireland and of the kind of quirkiness, I guess. And we used a lot of accordion, and that was one of the things that really surprised me actually when I was working on the score, was how much the accordion brought to it. And there's a lot of really beautiful cues that are just a smaller string section with the accordion kind of underneath it, just adding this amazing warmth and this incredible character. So that was one of my favorite of the kind of setups that we had, was the smaller strings with the accordion and the clarinet.
Now, is that the first time you've written extensively for the accordion?
Yes, it is. I had no idea how versatile it was. I mean, I really didn't. Initially, it was just in all of the more folky cues and the kind of slightly more comedy cues. I kind of started with the accordion, was my kind of starting point. And then we just started, and actually my orchestrator just started kind of adding it into everything. And it just was so beautiful. And it had this like really delicate quality, this kind of drone quality, you know, that you could just put in to really quite delicate, beautiful orchestral cues. And it just, I feel like it just gave the score a kind of identity that was slightly different. It just, you know, that gave it just a little kind of signature sound.
It's kind of like how some composers sweeten their organic strings with some sort of sample strings to kind of glue everything together. That kind of provided that glue, if you will.
It did. It's exactly that. It totally did that. It really did. It just gave it this kind of, it just grounded it all, embedded it into something.
Well, the score is pretty fantastic. We'll get back to Wild Mountain Time in just a few minutes, but I wanted to kind of talk with you a little bit, Amelia, about your background. We always ask our guest composers here how they started in music and how that brought them to where they are today, but you sort of have a multifaceted career where you've been an actress in some big films, as well as you are an artist under the name Slowly Moving Millie, is that right, for several years? And then you kind of made this transition into film scoring. So I guess when you started off, did you start off as a musician or an actress or both?
I mean, I think both. I mean, I'd always been musical, and I'd say that growing up and school and as a child, music was definitely my thing and what, you know, made me the happiest and probably what I spent most of my time doing was sitting at the piano. I mean, that was just my absolute happy place. But through my education, I kind of lost my way with classical training, and I really kind of just let go of all of that, and I stopped formally learning the piano, and so I guess I almost at that stage there was kind of like a, I felt like, okay, well, this is for me, and it's not something that I'm ever going to be able to do anything with, because music theory I found really, really difficult, and I play everything by ear, and so it was kind of like having to unlearn my instinctual way of playing was not right, you know, in terms of when you're having lessons. And so I kind of thought, well, look, I'm not going to do the lessons, and I'm just going to have this for my thing. And so that's the way I saw it. I kind of ruled out the idea of doing anything with it professionally, certainly, but I always played and I always composed things, and I always, you know, had a piano. It was the first thing I bought, you know, with money I made when I was acting, was a piano. So, you know, it was always my kind of first love. And then I started acting, which was just a really lucky chance kind of opportunity that came along, where I had the opportunity to have an agent and he saw me in something, some kind of amateur, you know, youth theatre.
Was this back, you grew up in England, is that right?
Yeah, this was in London. So I was about 16. And so I had this agent, and then I got some work very quickly, and it was really exciting and it was great. And I think that, you know, I was completely blown away by the film world and being part of films. And I was really lucky early on to work with some kind of amazing directors, and just being on set and being around all of those talented people. And it was like, you know, I just thought, this is it. This is where I need to be. Mm. But very quickly, I realized this is not it. I'm in the wrong bit of it, you know, and I was very self-conscious and I was very shy. And I really, really struggled with being on camera. And I as I got older, it just got worse. And I just got kind of, you know, I got really bad anxiety and panic attacks, and auditioning became almost impossible for me. And I was really struggled with it all. And so I think I only did it for about 4 or 5 years. I think when I was about, you know, my early 20s, I was like, okay, I can't, I'm actually going to make myself sick doing this, because I was just really, really uncomfortable. And during that time, I had got some software. So I got Logic for the first time, and I had that on my computer. And that just really changed stuff for me, because I started, actually, even when I was on set, when I was acting in my trailer, I would be writing music and I'd be making little tracks, and I'd be writing songs, and I'd be, you know, arranging things. And I had my keyboard and I had my Logic. And so that was like my kind of thing that I was doing all the time. And then a friend of mine had just written a short film, and she did this short film and it was lovely, and they didn't have any money. And so she was like, we really want a piano piece and you play the piano. Could you write something? So I wrote something for it, and it was the first time I'd written, you know, to picture, and actually had that experience of watching something and responding and writing. And I just was like, oh my God, this is what I want to do. And I love this. And all the time I'd been obsessed with scores and film music, and, you know, so that there'd always been this kind of obsession with it and this love of it. But that was like the first time that I went, oh my God, maybe I could do this, because I just thought that it was a possibility, because they didn't have the training, and I didn't, you know, I just imagined that you have to be there conducting and you have to be this kind of, you know, it just always felt so unattainable. So suddenly I was like, oh my God, maybe I could do this. And I feel like there was suddenly a new wave of film composers that were maybe more coming from different backgrounds and coming from being artists or being, neoclassical. There was kind of this movement. And so it's all started to kind of open up a bit. I did some commercials. I had a record deal with Universal that I was meant to do when I was Slow Moving Millie, and I was meant to write an album, but I didn't really write songs. And again, it was just, it was an amazing opportunity, but I knew I was in the wrong section. And so I ended up just going back to them and I said, I can't do an album. Like, I can't sing in front of people. I'm really, really can't perform. It's not something I want to do. I've been down that road. And, but I have all of this piano music that I write, and that's where my heart is. And will you listen to it? And they did, and they were really amazing. And there was one particular person at Universal who listened to the music and said, this is great. Let's release, an EP or a mini album of all of your music. And that was the first kind of thing that I released with the kind of classical music. And I've done three now. And then from doing the first, the second album, from that, I got my first film score because a director wanted to license one of the pieces. And then I met up with him for a coffee and he was like, oh, I love this piece. Tell me about it. And I just kind of quite brazenly said, who's writing the score? And he said, we don't know. And I was like, well, can I write it? Because I can write a score around that track. Mm. And so that's basically how I got Mum's List, which was the first feature that I did. And then it just kind of, happened from there.
Well, the non-film stuff that I've listened to of yours, it's very cinematic in quality right off the bat. So when you're listening to your music, even without the picture, it still has a very cinematic quality. So I can see how the director would want, something written around that for his film, because it does have a very cinematic quality to it. And it's funny to hear you talk about, writing music in your trailer. I just read Michael Caine's book on acting. Have you read this book?
No, I haven't. I was really lucky. I worked with him on one of the first films I did, and he was just the most amazing.
You would love the book then in that case. It's an amazing, it's a short little read too. It's great. But he talks about when he's on set with another actor, whatever they're doing in their trailer, that's what they want to be doing instead of acting.
Oh my God, that is so interesting. I mean, that is literally, I wish you told me that when I was 18 and I could have told you that earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of 18-year-olds should be told that. Whatever you're doing in the background of what you're being paid to do, that's probably what you should be doing, I guess.
100%. Yeah, it's so true.
So what was the way you talk about it, it seems like you were kind of whisked away into the world of film scoring, but was there a big kind of decision point because you were down a path in acting where you could have kept going and you were getting work and, a lot more than most people get in the field. Was there a decision point where you kind of had to make a choice between acting and composing, or did you leave the door open to still act, or what was that thought process like?
It was, I definitely made a decision not to act anymore, and that was quite decisive, I would say. But it wasn't to be a composer. Like, that there was still kind of a lag in time before I got there. There was maybe a kind of a few years in the wilderness trying to work out what to do. But there was definitely a decision not to act anymore, because that was just, like I said, I was really, the way that I put it is, I loved everything about acting apart from the bit between action and cut. And as an actor, that's meant to be.
So all of the drop takes are amazing, but the ones they actually were rolling the camera.
So I love the travel. I love the people. I love the stories. I love being on set. I loved watching everyone and seeing what they were all doing. And like, I was, just love watching the crew and the cameraman. And I mean, I was so into it all, but then they'd be like, okay, we're going to roll. And I'd be like, just complete panic, fear. And then as soon as they said cut, I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to, and I just, and at some point I just thought, this is silly. Like, this is not how it's meant to be. And I think, when it, when I got a bit older and suddenly I was having to really kind of fight for roles, and it got a lot more, you know, it was hard. And I think, you know, you really have to want to do it. You have to really, really, it has to be your passion. And when it's not, and you're kind of putting yourself through the same horrible processes and all of the rejection, you just think, why am I doing this? This isn't even what I want to be doing. Mm. And so I kind of decided that I was not going to do that anymore. And then I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I knew it was something to do with music. And I did kind of make, you know, the decision to stop. And I didn't leave the door open at all, because I just knew that it was such a relief for me when I stopped. It really was just like this liberation. And I knew that it wasn't anything I wanted to kind of revisit again. And then it took me a while. And then I just remember, having coffee with somebody, and I was talking about kind of various things that I was, you know, I was thinking about maybe being a music supervisor, because I absolutely love music. And, you know, I listen to so much, and I've always been obsessed with, you know, playlists and weird, rare, you know, music and finding tracks. And so I kind of was talking about that. And then I was talking about writing songs, and I was kind of, and I had, this is when I had my record deal, and I was, and my friend just kind of said, if you could do anything in the world, don't think about practicalities, don't think about how, just if you could do anything, what would it be? And I just, before I even thought, kind of fell out of my mouth, I just was like, I want to write music for film. And it was just like, as soon as I said it, she was like, well, that's what you've got to do. And then I just thought, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. But it, you know, and I think it was just something that I just never really had the confidence to say, because I do feel like even only 10 years ago, there weren't many women to look at doing, you know, there weren't many people that you could kind of see in the road ahead of you that felt like, okay, I can do that. You know, it felt like a kind of a closed door. It really did. Mm. And I think that's just also because I didn't have that musical background where I could say, well, I've got my degree in music and I've got my this, and, you know, I didn't. So I just felt, but like I said, I think now it's different. I think it's a lot more inclusive. I think there's people, you know, people are more open to different kinds of people contributing music to film, you know, and it's reflecting in the really exciting scores that we're getting, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw recently, I think you were just on a panel with several female film composers. And it was just funny. I was kind of like flipping through, I think I got it through Facebook, an invite for it. And I was like, yeah, that's some pretty heavy hitters now. Like, it's sort of, you know, the glass ceiling is broken, so to speak. And
hopefully, I mean, it's definitely, it's encouraging, isn't it? It's exciting. I think it's really exciting.
Yeah. And it just opens up our world to so many different points of view from different composers that, you know, we haven't heard in the past. So yeah, I think it's a great thing that the time that we're going through is so exciting for composers. And as you were saying, you know, many of the greatest film composers, they don't have a background in film scoring. You know, they didn't go up through the traditional means. It's like, oh, well, you know, Danny Elfman came from the Oingo Boingo world, you know, and Trent Reznor was in Nine Inch. I mean, it's there's so many different points of view.
Yeah, totally. And once I kind of started hearing about those people and enjoying that kind of music, and even people like, you know, Hauschka and Dustin O'Halloran and people who, and Max Richter, and, you know, it's not that they're not classically trained, but they've just got, it's that kind of minimalist, it's just a different sound that I kind of really identified with and thought, you know, that's the kind of music that, you know, that I love to make. And it just felt that, yeah, there was a big shift in terms of what people wanted and what people were open to hearing.
Film was Mary Shelley, and that score is a very, I would say, dramatic is the term for that score. It's a pretty, I wouldn't say heavy, but it's It's hardcore drama, if you will. It is dark in nature, I think, but the voice...
Kind of gothic through and through, isn't it?
Yes,
What was the process of writing that? How did that job come about?
Yeah, so it came about through a friend of mine was working on that film and was listening to one of my EPs, mm-hmm. and was kind of playing it on set. And the director, Haifa, really responded to it and was like, oh, I love this. What is this? And so then we kind of started talking, and we started talking quite early. They were still shooting. It was pretty early on. And so I started kind of writing a couple of ideas and a couple of themes. And then, I worked for quite a long time before I'd actually got the job. It was a funny one, but I just kind of kept working. They were editing. So it was like a long kind of process.
You just gave film composers a great idea. Just hand an EP to somebody on the set and just have them play it. Like, have your iPhone go off with this music for like 10 or 15 times. Right when you're next to the director, you'll get it in their ear.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. I should. It's a good technique. I read the script, and then I saw a couple of early cuts, and then I didn't see it for a while, and then I saw it. It went through a couple of different, you know what it's like with films, they kind of change, and they evolve so much, even from that first cut to what you end up with. But I love the script, and I was a massive Mary Shelley fan and a huge fan of, Frankenstein. And so it was kind of a dream job for me. Mm. I'm always very drawn to, slightly kind of gothic, atmospheric things. I don't know if it's because of where I live, but like I was saying to you, we're surrounded with fog and forests, and it's very spooky, and I kind of love it. So,
yeah, I can hear that in that score, actually. Were you living in there at the time when you wrote that score?
Yeah, I was really inspired by where I live, for sure. And it definitely came through, I think, on what I wrote. But I knew I wanted something that could feel slightly contemporary, because I felt like even though it was a period film, I felt like this woman was she felt like she could be a contemporary of mine. It felt like she could be alive today. It felt like she was born in the wrong time. Mm. She was incredibly progressive and radical in her thinking. And so I didn't want the score to feel like some kind of very stiff, old-fashioned period score. Mm. And so I did lots and lots of layering of electronics, and that was kind of a big key component, I guess, of the score, was just having the modern elements, having beautiful kind of synths and lots and lots of synths kind of layered up with the strings. Mm. And I think what was really nice about that film was when I saw the film, they had a temp, they had a really amazing temp on it, actually. I loved lots of the temp music, and it was really, bold, and it was really unexpected. There was some amazing kind of, there was a great track on it, an Agnes Obel track, and it just worked so well. So I kind of, in a way, the temp had kind of proven that you could push the boundaries. Mm. With the score, which was really nice. So so I knew I wanted to use voice, and I knew I wanted to have a female voice, just because for me, when I think of gothic, I just think of a voice.
Yeah.
So that was, one of the first ideas. And I also did lots of recorded breathing, and I recorded lots of kind of these kind of sounds of breath. And that was kind of used throughout as a sample of kind of breathing and kind of intakes of breath. And I wanted it to have like a visceral, alive feeling to it, again, because she was so alive and she was so radical and kind of electric almost in her thinking. Mm. And then on the other side of it, there was a super romantic side to the film. There was really beautiful romantic theme that I had. And then there was also the kind of the more like monster horror aspects as well, which were the really dark, really dramatic moments. And then the other side, the kind of last piece of it, I guess, was the galvanization stuff and when all the science. So she was kind of really obsessed with science. And so I wanted to kind of create a sound that felt really, that was just this very, very sparse kind of very, very low strings with lots of atmospherics, lots of synths on top, and big, big bass. And that was kind of almost like her, the sound of her inspiration, the sound of the idea of bringing something back to life. Mm. And the kind of sound of, I wanted to create a kind of sound of what science was like back then. And then also there was just so much kind of grief in the film as well, because she loses a baby and because she's kind of in this abusive relationship. And so I think that the grief and the sorrow was really heavy, and I feel like that's, you know, hopefully reflected in the score as well. You know, there's this great sadness in the story and like real humanity, even though so much of it is about the monsters and the kind of there's also just this human, you know, this young girl who's kind of going through a lot of loss and grief. So there was a complicated score in a way. There were like lots of things going on. But I absolutely just loved working on it. I had so much fun. And
a lot of times the more complex the score, first you get nervous because you're like, how am I going to write this? I've never written anything like this. And then you realize it's an opportunity to write something like that. And, you know, that's the opportunities that those types of score bring about are pretty unique when they happen, especially in one film like this, where you're going back and forth between this highly dark drama. And there was one part I was listening to where drums enter and it almost feels like a groove. And I was just listening to it and I'm like, how did she fit this like almost like a funk hip hop groove into this gothic film?
Yeah, that, I remember actually that was a really big thing in the film was percussion. Mm-hmm. Because it just it really needed it. And again, it's funny like how things like the film teaches you, I think. Mm. And that was one of those examples. And I remember one of the producers just saying to me something about like, I feel like there just needs to be a guy standing there with a big drum. And I was like,
we can get one of those.
And I was like, yeah, okay. And actually every time we put there's a few cues where we put these like big drums and these kind of beats into this like orchestral music almost, and it just it really, really worked. And the film just kind of was like, yes, I want this. So it was really fun actually. I remember the drums being a big discovery, a big aha moment, you know, and you're like, oh yes, that's it.
It's so wonderful when the director asks for something that you know is something you want to do, but you didn't have the courage to kind of put in there. And then you're like, all right, yes, absolutely. You want electric guitar here? Let's do it. More gong, we need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Won these awards and everybody loved the score for Mary Shelley. And then this next feature that, as you hear this, is already out. By the way, is this going to be released in theaters? Do you know how it's being released at this point?
Oh, I actually don't know. In the UK, there's cinemas are closed, like theaters are closed. So no, but it's not coming out here in February. I think in the States it is getting a cinematic release. So there must be cinemas open somewhere, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We have them. It varies state to state throughout. So there are theaters open.
And probably streaming. I would say it would be available to stream as well.
Okay. Yeah. That's what's kind of nice about these. It's such a weird thing, this time we're going through. As I'm interviewing composers, one of the biggest questions is, you know, is this going to be streamed or is this going to be theatrical? And a lot of a lot of it is both being released at the same time. And it's, I can't decide if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing for the industry, but
I feel the same. I mean, I think in some ways, I think it was probably headed that way already. I think we were probably on that path. You know, if you look at, like, I guess Roma was a big watershed moment when that won everything at the Oscars, and it was a Netflix film, you know, and it was released at the cinema, but it was also just released on. So I feel like we were probably already at that tipping point where that was going to happen. And this has just maybe accelerated it, you know, so it's happened a lot faster than any of us could have anticipated. But I think ultimately I'm trying to be positive about it and just think, well, if it means that more people have access to seeing these films, and, but then, I mean, just selfishly as a composer, I think it's hard, you know, when you put so much into the sound and you just don't know how people are hearing it, you know, and you do want just to know that people are hearing it in a cinema and getting that full experience that you've mixed for. And then suddenly you're like, but, you know, again, I haven't, you know, I've watched so many films now at home. And I think people have a much better setup at home now. People who like films, people who are into, you know, they tend to have really good speakers or surround sound. I think people are, you know, setting themselves up. So, you know, it's, there are definitely pluses and negatives.
Well, I listened to it. I watched the film at home, and it was, it did transfer very well. Like, do you get the score has this incredible opening with this lush string sound and full orchestra coming across, and it came across well on the small screen. And I, you know, I've got a little surround set up in there, but it's nothing, you know, it's nothing Dolby Atmos or anything like that. But the music definitely came across through it. Called Wild Mountain Time. And how did this come about?
Well, it came about through, I mean, it was actually just my agent just kind of called me and said, you know, let's, you know, tell me about what you know about Wild Mountain Time. And, you know, and she, I think that, you know, the production were kind of at that stage where they maybe got in touch. And they were saying, we're kind of starting to think about composers who might be right. And so she was like, well, I think Amelia would be right. So she called me, and I was familiar with the film because my husband is in it. So I was like, yeah, I mean, I know about it. And then I read it, and then was, you know, just bewitched by it instantly, just absolutely loved it. And and I wrote music straight away, and I've, like, that's never really happened before. And I just kind of, I actually wrote a theme for my husband, and I kind of said to him, like, this is your character's theme, and it's just for him to use, like, as his own thing, you know?
Yeah, I should mention that Amelia's husband is Jamie Dornan, who, of course, starred in the 50 Shades of Grey franchise. As well as this film, he stars opposite Emily Blunt. He's really great in this movie, by the way.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Yeah, he has a very challenging part to play in this film, and it comes across great. And his music is such a big part of it. So it's, and that must have been a very weird experience writing music literally for your husband.
Yeah, it was. I mean, in some ways it was so lovely because even though we didn't actually ever work together, obviously because my part came much up, you know, when they were finished, it was such a lovely thing getting to kind of work on something together and having that collaboration and getting to talk about it. And, you know, because it's such an unusual film. And I think, you know, we both just felt really strongly about it, and we both really fell for it, so it was really lovely getting to kind of share something like that. And and then, you know, for me to kind of come on afterwards, and he'd finished shooting a year, you know, almost a year before, and it was really fun. I had lots of fun just kind of being, you know, mean and pretending that I'd written you know, just all of his themes on the bassoon. And I was...
can just say, honey, here, listen to this part here. I've decided only kazoo for you. Only kazoo.
And it's... That's why I was like, that's going to be your character's instrument. And it works really well. And the director loves it.
Director loves it.
Loves it. I just put kazoo, even when you're speaking, it's just over the top.
We're actually going to have the kazoo stand in your light. So the kazoo is going to be on the screen. And, yeah, absolutely.
I did have a lot of fun with him kind of doing that. It was really special. I loved it. I love getting to be involved in something. And especially as it was so important to him, like this, you know, there are jobs, jobs kind of come and go, but this job was really, really important to him. And so it felt like a kind of family job. It was really nice. And Emily is actually a really old friend. She's kind of one of my best friend's sister. And so there was this lovely connection with the whole thing. And I felt like I was kind of had this precious thing that I wanted to protect and that I wanted to like elevate and just celebrate, you know, and I felt very honored to be the person who got to do that.
For those of you that are about to see it, it's set in Ireland and you go into these pubs and then you have Christopher Walken coming through, but then you also have this sort of heartwarming, I mean, it's a love story, this entire film. And there's comedic aspects of it. There's kind of heart-wrenching aspects of it. There's kind of a big challenge there. When you were doing your initial discussions with the director, was there a clear direction for the music, or was it something where you were given kind of free rein?
Well, I mean, I was really lucky that I was given a pretty loose rein at the beginning because I had written some themes while they were still shooting, or kind of, you know, towards the end, and the producers really, really and the director really loved these themes. There's one in particular theme. It's the opening theme on the first, you know, the opening the movie, and so by the time I kind of was brought onto the project, I'm like, John had heard this music and he'd kind of lived with it for a while. And he was like, this is the right music. You know, this is what's right. And just write more. I kind of started in a really good position, as in like, normally the hardest bit is always the beginning, isn't it? Starting. But I had this kind of base where I had this theme that was really, really working with the film. And so that kind of side of it, and the kind of classic side and the romance and the landscape and the majesty of Ireland and all of that, I felt really clear in what I was doing. And then I guess there was a slight, you know, the hard bit that took a bit longer, I guess, to crack was just the kind of comedy and the lightness. And I remember quite early on writing a cue for when he falls out of the boat. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, John, we'd been talking about it and we were like, yeah, it's really funny, and like making it really fun and making it really light and really silly. And then I kind of sent John something that I'd done, and he just called me back and just kind of said, yeah, so I think what we're discovering is silly doesn't work. I was like, yeah, okay. So then we kind of worked out quite quickly that actually it all had to be played pretty straight with this film. Musically, obviously not the actual film, but kind of being silly or making it too silly, it didn't work, because actually these characters are like, they're super serious. They really think they're like in their heads, and they don't think that they're being funny or weird or strange or eccentric. They're like, they're just living their lives. And so if the music was too kind of knowing or kind of being funny, it didn't work with the characters. The music kind of had to be like them. The music had to be really straight. Mm. And then the comedy worked, and then the silly stuff worked. Like, the music couldn't be in on the joke. It had to just play it straight.
Yeah, I think that's so common for directors to say that, you know, if it's comedy, they don't want comedic music, and they try and express that in so many different ways. And they're like, oh yeah, no, I don't want to show the comedy. I want the music to be straight. And
yeah,
there's usually 100 different ways that they try and express that. And then sometimes it brings you back to comedic music, and they're like, oh no, that's perfect. Why didn't you do that in the first place?
That's so funny. That's so true. That was the trickiest bit, I would say, in terms of just getting that right, because, you know, there's so much comedy, and it's very funny, and there are light moments, but it's kind of grounded in something really soulful and really beautiful and really quite serious. So it was just having that, you know, delicate balance between those things.
Yeah. And the sort of the intimacy of the two of them in kind of their farmhouse situation. And then there's so many scenes inside the pub. Well, actually, there's probably not that many, but it seems like it's such a big part of the film for me.
Such wonderful moments in the pub, isn't it? There's the two big songs, and it's just, you know, and that was another thing about the film that was, I guess, kind of unusual, was that when I came onto it, there were already these two very strong musical ideas, mm-hmm. you know, which was the Swan Lake and then the Wild Mountain Time, the song. And those two things, you know, it's such a huge part of the film, and they have such a kind of, they're really important. And so the score had to kind of sit in between those two things. You've got kind of full drama and epic scope of Swan Lake, and then you have the lovely, beautiful folk, kind of soulful, gorgeous Wild Mountain Time folk song. And I felt like the score had to be the bridge between those things.
Yeah, it's funny, I wanted to mention the Swan Lake is such a big part of the story of the film, and obviously the actual music of Swan Lake is in there. And it seems like, I mean, everything from the wardrobe to like thematic elements bring you to Swan Lake. So how much was that involved in the discussion of the music with the director? Did they want any sort of quotes of it? Or was it just, that's going to be over here, you do your thing over here?
It was kind of like that, to be honest. I don't think there was ever any, I mean, we maybe had kind of some vague discussions about maybe trying to bring some of the themes or the kind of motifs or elements of Swan Lake into the kind of island world. But to be honest, I think it worked really well that's Rosemary, and that's her kind of inner world, you know, is Swan Lake. And I felt like having it kind of just unadulterated and left alone and it really was how it, you know, it worked really well as it was. And it's almost like this kind of standalone, you know, there's two big moments, aren't there? And it was like this kind of standalone thing. So yeah, I think it worked, kind of keeping it separate.
Yeah, there's this wonderful moment where Rosemary has this stark black costume on top of a horse, and Anthony is in this white overcoat, raincoat that he was gifted. And it's such a wonderful element when he's given that coat. You're like, why is that coat white? And then like at the end of it all starts to come together. And I'm just watching it, and I'm like, that's really brilliant, brilliant wardrobe design and everything. So all that stuff comes across very well. And that's when really the score starts to kick in, when they're really getting into it. And that's funny, because it's all about the storytelling of the two of them. That's really what this whole film comes down to.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, that's definitely my favorite part of the score is probably that section where it, you know, gets very overblown and huge and dramatic. And I just had so much fun with that, because you kind of, so Reel 5, which is that section of them in the house having that like 20 minute, you know, chat, that's a really, really, really long scene. And so there's no music in that at all. And so I feel like you're kind of building and building and building up this moment of them being in the house together, you know, and the whole, you know, she's the whole time, she's like the whole movie, she's like following him around. Trying to get him to stay, trying to get him not to go, trying to get him to visit, trying to, you know, and it's all building, and he's kind of, you know, avoiding. And then it's all building and building and building up to this moment where they're in the house together. Yeah. And I wanted the score to kind of like propel them into this scene. You're coming into this scene, which, you know, is a really long, brilliant scene.
Yeah.
And so I felt like it had to almost be at like a fever pitch at that point, you know, when we're getting them in that house together and there's the rain and the storm and the drama and, you know, that front door closes and you're like, oh my God, you know, in the house. And I had so much fun writing that cue and with drums and the cymbals. And I mean, there was just, I threw everything at it and it was just, it was really, really fun to write.
Yeah. Well, the theme comes across throughout the entire film. So bravo for that. We talk about melody so much on the show and the importance of melody in the film scores. And right off the bat, you know, as you were saying, the melody is there and you stick with it throughout. So I thought that that was a very important connecting factor throughout the film. But the music is beautiful. It's intense. It has the intimacy and the comedy and everything like that. So I really, really enjoyed this score and the film. The one question I was really curious about is your experience as an actress. Does that help you score as far as picking up on nuances of acting, or is it something that you don't think about?
I mean, it's probably something I'm not consciously thinking about, but I do, you know, I wonder if it probably does help me a little bit just with kind of story and narrative and just kind of how that's coming across with the acting. But I mean, I don't know necessarily if, I think it was probably more to be, I think what probably helped me more was just reading a lot of scripts, you know, because when I was an actress, I did, you know, you read a lot of scripts, and I think kind of reading all those scripts, being on set, seeing the process, I think I found quite helpful.
Gotcha. Well, again, the film is called Wild Mountain Time, starring Emily Blunt, Jamie Dornan, Christopher Walken, and John Hamm. It is available as you are hearing this. We've been speaking with Amelia Warner, the composer of the film. Do you have any other projects coming up, Amelia, or are you in quarantine shutdown like the rest of Hollywood?
Yeah, in quarantine. So I'm not sure what's next. There's a couple of things kind of, you know, hopefully on the horizon, but it's just everything's, I guess, being pushed around and pushed back a bit because of, you know, the delay in filming and stuff. So I'm not entirely sure what will end up happening next. But I'm going to write another album, I think, at the beginning of next year, because that's something I can kind of just be getting on with. Mm. Yeah, a couple of other little projects going on, but I'm not certain what the next thing will be.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It was a real pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for spending so much time with us. Everybody can go out and look for Wild Mountain Time, and the score will be available, will be being released separately from the film, I imagine?
Yeah, it's being released by Lakeshore for the same day as the film, so...
Great. And the soundtrack for Mary Shelley is also available, and that is a really amazing score as well. So thank you so much, Amelia.
Thank you for your support and for taking an interest in it. And it was really nice to talk to you.
We will see you next week on another episode of Hooked on Score.
Bye.